I think working with a coach of any kind is great. There's lots of different kind of modalities that can get you there. It is about going back and experiencing that feeling and really seeing where you first felt that way about that shame or whatever it is.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe. We're here with Elle Russ today. We're super excited to have her here. She wrote a book that you all need to hear and that your children need to hear, and it is Confident as Fuck. And what a powerful title. We're so excited to have you here. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah. And I guess technically the title doesn't say the whole word, you know, pronouncing maybe a little more difficult. So it's so good to see you. You're in California, you said. What area?
Yes, I'm in the mountains above Malibu, and it is beautiful here. I'm sorry to say for everybody where it's snowing. Yeah, it's lovely.
Oh, wonderful. And you're safe from the fires recently?
Yes, I am. Well, I am in the middle of 100,000 acres that did burn 2 years ago. So I was the victim of a horrible natural disaster there a couple of years ago. But we're hoping that because things burned a couple of years ago, it won't ever get that bad here. But you know, we're a little bit always on alert. I always have my phone nearby. It's just sort of living in the West at this point. We're just kind of ready to bail at any moment, which is a little disconcerting. But then the sun shines out and you're in your bikini and you forget all about it suddenly. You get real quick, you forget about it.
Isn't that amazing? And nature's so powerful. We get hurricanes here and we've been definitely devastated by them a few times. So
yeah, but you're still there.
Yeah, we're still here because I'm confident that it doesn't happen every day, just as you are.
Oh, yeah.
So in your book, you talk about top qualities of confident people. And I'd love for you to list some of those. And I'm really wondering, are qualities things that you can teach or are they just something that you're born with?
Yeah. So one of the things I always like to say is that confidence is not a fixed anchored quality within you. So your levels of confidence are really the sum of the thoughts you think and the actions you take. And also it's not reflective of your actual capacity to succeed at something. It's more reflective of your belief in your ability to prevail at life in general or at a specific endeavor. So since you can change your thoughts and actions, right, you know, it is absolutely self-esteem and confidence are within your power. And even the most shy people crippled by fear have been able to do it. Some of the people that are super ground zero, who literally just are crippled with shyness, they may need to get a social coach to take them out to a mall, talk with people at businesses. If you're at that level, you can still get it. Most people aren't at ground zero. They just need a little bit more than what they have. And yeah, some of the qualities are really interesting. I'll list off a bunch of them right here. Well, first of all, confident people approach challenging situations as something to be conquered and mastered, not hazards to be feared or avoided. They're comfortable with failures and mistakes. They speak with authority. They're dependable, reliable, trustworthy, usually on time, very proactive types. That's why employers will often rather hire someone who exudes confidence versus having a skill in a thing. They also encourage and foster and celebrate the success of others. This is really important to note. So just because someone is outward bravado and, you know, throwing their hands up in the air doesn't mean they're a nice person or that they're confident, because confident people are nice and they do encourage the success of others. So confident people don't compete and they're not jealous. So if you run into those people, those are just people that are misusing their outward performance confidence to sort of bully, take down, and dominate people. And that's not really confidence either. I mean, they've got a baseline of it to some degree, but it's, you know. So confident people are leaders, they're decisive, they're goal-oriented, and they focus on their strengths, not their weaknesses. They have healthy relationships, you know, they have high self-esteem. They're not easily offended. They're constantly learning, usually choose reason over reaction. Although one of the pitfalls of highly confident people that needs to be refined is that we're sometimes very quick, at least one of the lessons I've learned, very quick to speak your mind. And we have a lot to learn from people that are a little bit less confident on being diplomatic and being able to just kind of sit there for a minute and simmer, or something I call be careful on the send, right? We've all, launched a nasty email and it's like, we regret it. We should have just waited. We should have given it 24 hours. So that's one of the things. But for the most part, we choose reason over reaction. And yeah, loving and compassion towards others. You know, competent people are nice. They believe in their own abilities. They have very effective communication skills. They don't feel the need to prove themselves to anyone. They're defined and are achieving their own definition of success. You know, they're usually very happy. You know, they speak the truth. They tell it like it is. Oftentimes handling stressful situations with ease, with composure. And even if it's not with composure, they're able to handle it. And again, just focusing on the solution rather than the problem. Those are just a few of many, many qualities of confident people. Yeah.
That's wonderful. And so parents can teach these qualities, or like you said, even someone that's ground zero can get a, you know, a social coach. We can encourage these things. Can you tell me what are some things that we can encourage? It's possible to encourage. Do you have any tips on how maybe we could turn them toward that confidence?
I think it's really important that all children, regardless of whether it's true or not, that we, because I have worked with children for, I worked with children for many, many years, all different types of kids. And the one important thing is that when you label the child, they adopt it. You know, if your kid keeps overhearing about, that's the lazy one. Okay. Right. That's the bratty one. Then that is going to carry through to adulthood. So we got to worry about what kind of labels you're smacking on people and what you're exposing them to. For example, many years ago, I was a camp counselor for 7-year-olds at an 8-week overnight camp. And one of the 7-year-olds there was on medication every night. I believe it was some sort of antidepressant we had to give her. And the other kids would ask, like, what's that pill? Why are you taking that pill? Now, apparently she had seen her father die or something like that. There was some sort of traumatic experience. But here's the problem with the way I looked at the situation. The answer that the child gave her was that, like, well, I'm sad. And so I have to take this pill because I'm a sad. You know, again, this kid is growing up thinking like, this is the way that I am. Something's wrong with me. And there might've been a better way to approach that. Like maybe they could have just given it to her and told her it was a freaking vitamin. Like, yeah. Why did they do you see the difference there? Yeah. What was the need to do that? I remember even then, even though I wasn't, you know, doing this work then, I remember going, oh my God, why would you tell a kid that she's going to grow up now, or it's going to be her identification as if something's wrong with her? And for example, a little bit off topic, but there's a celebrity fitness trainer, Holly Perkins, who is in her 40s now, but she was on antidepressants since she was like 10 and 11 for years and years and years. And everyone just kept like, well, this is your brain. This is the way it is. This is just who you are. Well, it turns out she gets to 40 and she realizes she has non-reactive, like gluten insensitivity and dairy insensitivity. She literally takes those two things out of her diet and she's off antidepressants.
Amazing.
The first time for her whole life. Now, what a story that everyone told her. Where's the story of hope? Oh, well, we'll figure this out one day. Where's the encouragement there? Instead, it was a stamp. This is what's wrong with you. This is your brain. You have a problem. So, you know, that was a tough thing for her. You know, she's identified all these years and then suddenly this thing is gone and it wasn't that. That's a tough pill to swallow in a lot of ways. So I think there's certain things like labels on kids are really important. The other thing is making sure that kids feel that they're smart. And there's a lot of ways to do this because kids are constantly making incredible observations about the world as they learn about it. And we already know these connections because we're adults and we see them. But when you see a child make that kind of connection, honor it. And detail it, review it. You know why that was so smart? Because you saw that and you knew that about this and you knew that about this. You put them together and you know what? You're right. Or even if they're wrong about their conclusion. I'll give a great example that happened recently. And this is not even political, even though it's discussing a political figure. You know, everyone knows when the president came out and kind of suggested something like, oh, well, what if we use disinfectant for the virus or whatever? Okay. So it doesn't even matter what you think of this. Okay. It's just that. Now, when I heard that, I thought that's kind of a conclusion a little kid would have drawn, right? They would have said, hey, mommy, you're spraying Lysol on the table. Why don't we just spray Lysol on us for coronavirus? Now, here's the thing. Even in that moment, there's an opportunity to tell them how smart they are. Instead of just going, no, we don't do that. You would say, you know what? I see that's really smart observation. I see because you get that but unfortunately, this is why it's different because this doesn't go into the body, right? And you can explain why it's wrong, but instead of shooting down, honor the connection they've made. It's really important to tell kids how smart they are and honor that, particularly with little girls. This is a really big problem. So it's often a problem with dads. Every little girl wants to be told, oh, you're so cute. Look at the pretty dress. Okay, we get it. But you need to be aware as a parent that you are. We compliment our sons on sort of achievements and character and things like this. And we're not complimenting the girls on that. And this is important to do that. While they still want to be told they're pretty and cute and have a cute, pretty bow in their hair, we really do need to make, hopefully that makes sense, but we need to. Absolutely. I have a friend who noticed he was doing it with his daughter. Like he was always commenting on the appearance, you know, and again, that's not going to create really strong women, strong kids. Yeah. So anytime you have the opportunity to exemplify and really detail how smart a child's observation is, again, even if it's wrong, is something that is again, positive reinforcement constantly. Absolutely.
That's incredible. And now, would that fall under the same category as parental garbage?
Yeah, well, so I talk about parental garbage in my book because a lot of people need to, well, adults need to look back and see what in their childhood, right, is possibly chumping on their confidence.
Dump that garbage.
And, yeah.
Dump that garbage.
Such yeah. garbage. And so you as a parent then, in hearing maybe a story I'm about to tell, might go, okay, well, so for example, a great example is Brandon in the book. He grew up in a really lovely household, you know, no one struggled for anything, middle class, no one got beaten, molested, whatever, you know, they all had what they needed. But the dad was a little bit of a hothead where, like, if something went missing, you know, the hammer would go missing, he'd blame Brandon, be like, I know you stole the hammer, where is it? And Brandon would be like, I didn't take the hammer. And then his dad would find the hammer and never apologize. You know, so I think, and now granted, hopefully people listening aren't like that. But again, you have to see the consequences of your action, because if these are sort of your behavior, what Brandon happened to Brandon is he grew up and what happened in the presence of authority on every single job as a contractor, he was always made to be wrong. He was always wrong for something he didn't do. Now he was attracting that into his life. That's why we have to get rid of the parental garbage. You're going to repeat the patterns that you experience in childhood, whether they're healthy or not. That's psychology 101. So what are you pushing out to your children? The other thing too is modeling relationships. You know, my mother was, she never had gossipy, weird drama with any of her friends and never talked badly about women, talked behind their back. It was never, she never had any of that. And therefore I'm not like that. And women need to help women. So the worst part of being a parent is little girls are horribly mean. It doesn't even matter where you are in Denmark. My stepfather's from Denmark. Even in Denmark, they've had such horrible things with the young girls and parents have had to come in. Kids are cruel. Right? So we got to kind of get on this. It's brutal, but it's like, you've got to recognize this and nip it in the bud. So, you know, there's lots of things in our childhood and things that a parent can be doing or projecting. Again, labels are important, or certain types of behavior. One of the most important things I see is, as a parent, because again, in seeing adults, you know, in the course of my life and how it's affected them, the worst thing to a kid is to say an idea of something and then not do it. Like, oh, maybe we'll go to Disneyland. Don't even fucking say it unless it's happening. Kids are not able to understand abstract type of thoughts like that. And so if you keep doing that to their child, what they're going to do is they're going to grow up someday and they are not going to trust people. And they are going to attract people that aren't trustworthy to continually confirm that. And I have seen that many, many times. And no, my parents were not like that, thank God. But again, trust issues can come from anywhere. But that's really important, because a lot of parents, and especially if you're, let's say you are a dad that just has them for the weekend, or you are a parent that's struggling and you want to sort of be like, oh, one day we're going to do this. And, you know, I'm going to, don't talk future plans like that unless you can actually follow through, because that is just going to kill the soul of that child when it doesn't happen. And then you're someone that they can't believe and they don't understand the projection of an idea versus telling them that, like, that's actually going to happen, if that makes any sense.
Huge. That's super powerful. And it reminds me that, you know, trauma can take forms of anything. You know, people think, oh, no big deal, we just didn't happen to go to Disney. Well, yeah, but if you said it five times and that was the one thing your kid looked forward to every year and every year it didn't happen, that is traumatic. And sometimes it takes a while to get out of that. And you mentioned, you know, the trust, but there's also with trauma, with that parental garbage that comes in, shame is a huge part of that. So you talk about the downer effect. Can you tell me how, you know, if the parents are just, you know, you talked about earlier, like really just putting on the children this negative cloak?
Well, it doesn't even have to be negative. It could be, Listen, I was actually being interviewed on this topic by two guys who, during the conversation of the interview, goes, oh my God, I was a downer to my kid. Oh. And what it was is that singing, I guess, runs in their family, and the kid has a terrible voice and was singing. And I guess the father made a comment like, well, you definitely don't have grandma's voice. Just a simple comment. And that kid stopped singing. You know, kids are going to change their mind all the time. If a kid comes to you at five and they're like, I'm going to marry Betty. They're not going to marry Betty. They're not maybe even a lesbian. They're just whatever. They're just kids. Just like, let it go. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Move on. It's not like, I mean, unless they keep coming to you, you know, like every second. All right. Something might be here to look at. So I think it's really important to keep promises. And on the note of the downer effect, how are you downering your kids? So your child's like, I want to be a fireman someday. And you're like, nah, we're smarter than that. We're better than that as a family. No, we don't do blue collar, or like whatever kind of comments you're making about some kid's dream. Don't just support it. We just have to be really careful about discounting people's dreams, because you know what? They've shown some studies in development. Like I saw this happen, and they're an adult now and they're okay, but they struggled for many years because their parent was a doctor and they kept pushing science and being a doctor onto this kid. And they had a completely different creative mind that is actually really screwing with the brain of the child at that point. You have to go with what that child is interested in. They may not end up doing it. What they'll remember is that you supported them in it. What they remember is that you were encouraging of it, that you were like, you can do anything you want. Great. You know, you want to be an opera singer. Great. You want to be a musician. Great. Now, those two things right there are a lot of things. Freak out a parent. Oh God, my kid wants to be a ballerina. Great. Or like, you know, or oh great, a writer, an actor. Oh, you know, that's going to be a loser game. And I get it, but we have to understand that these kids are not adults to a certain point. They're going to change their mind. So just support them and encourage them. If they're into that, then you support that. If they're into this right now, then you go with that. Short of anything being dangerous, support it. Your kid's geeking out and wants to like do magic sets and, you know, science experiments at home. That's who that kid is. Please honor it. Do you know what I mean? I have a friend who dressed up in like a 3-piece like little suit when he was five and was like playing cash register and bank. You know, I mean, like then he ended up being, you know, a total like accountant type guy. I mean, it was strange. The other kids weren't doing it, but oh well. So I think you just have to support at a certain point, because, you know, up until these kids are out of high school and even in college, they're going to change their mind. Just support them in the ways that they want to go. You can't be pushing. They're just going to always remember it. And it's just, I know that that's the case based on my experience and everyone else's. We will remember who was the encouraging one, who helped us, who encouraged us, who told us we could do anything we wanted to. And I think that that's just sort of the best platform you can have as a child. And I think that that's why I got a lot of confidence, because my mother was always like, you can do anything. You could be anything you want. You know, you're great at everything. I would maybe not be the lead in the play. I was really the best one. Nah, but mom, come on, Sally was really good. Nah, but see, I think you were better because of this. And she'd point out one moment from it, or everything I brought home artwork wise was the best thing. That's how you have to parent. I was roommates in college with a girl who was a ballerina. We went to a school that my first 2 years of college, which was like third in the country for ballet. Her mother would go to a performance of hers and they'd come out, and instead of being like, yay, wonderful job, her mother would be like, that third pirouette really needs work, or something like that. That is the last thing any of us want to hear from a parent at all. And it is so disheartening. I've had it happen to me too. And it's just, you're in a pool of tears, because the person you love the most and you want to be proud of you and you want to impress the most isn't. Fake it. People, you're a parent. Take the high road and fake it. They're wonderful. It was great. It was a great performance. Oh, but I fell. I barely noticed it. Oh, you recovered so quickly. You know, I just think that there's ways to parent and coach kids and sports and everything else. And I believe positive reinforcement is the way to do it. That builds confidence, even if it's not true.
Now, what about those children that are adults now? Because we're all recovering children, right?
Yeah.
What do you say to somebody that maybe had some of those negative experiences and maybe carry around some shame? I'm one of them. I think everything that I do, I feel guilty about. What's interesting is the only thing I don't have much of is mom guilt. And I think it's because that's like the one thing that I'm like, oh, I've got this part. But even days that sneaks in, but everything else in life, I feel like I carry this like bag of shame. And how do you counteract as an adult some of those things that are placed on you if they are shameful, if they are discouraging? How do you work out?
I think working with a coach of any kind is great. There's lots of different kind of modalities that can get you there. It is about going back and experiencing that feeling and really seeing where you first felt that way about that shame or whatever it is, unpacking it. You don't have to wear your heart on a sleeve and tell everybody about your shame like I do in my book, but you do have to get flat with it. You have to talk it out to someone, because a lot of people don't express it. And when they do have shame about something, the friend or the family member will be like, oh, there's no reason to be ashamed about that. Like, I don't even understand why you're ashamed of it. And that right there is basically saying, you're ridiculous. And so the person that's carrying the shame just won't bring it up again. They're not going to bring it up again. So you really need to go to an unbiased coach, therapist, or someone who could just help you unwrap and unravel that, because shame is really, it's really in the mind. And it kind of goes to, there's a great quote about shyness that's kind of related to shame in terms of when we're worried about what other people are going to think of us, which is a quote by Andre Debuse. And he said, shyness has a strange element of narcissism, the belief that how we look, how we perform is truly important to other people. It's kind of harsh, but there's a lot of truth there. It's very self-aggrandizing. Now, you could have been drunk driving 10 years ago and hit someone and killed them. Maybe you even did your time and you're still harboring shame over it, or you're embarrassed about it. You're afraid people will reject you or think less of you. Not everything needs to be expressed. You could take some stuff to the grave. I'm not saying that, you know, you have to get it all, but you have to work with someone, even if it's privately and confidentially, to get good with it so that you have no shame about your shame, whether it's expressed or not. You know, drug addicts and stuff, they have a lot of shame, right? They stole from family members while they were on crack. They, you know, all this kind of stuff. But you could also be ashamed because you have unsightly moles on your back. And one might say that that's ridiculous and the other's more worth the shame. But shame is shame is shame. It doesn't matter if you're ashamed of something. It doesn't matter what other people think about how stupid or how ridiculous it is. And that happened to me. People would be like, I don't even understand what you're ashamed about. That's ridiculous. And they'd kind of like laugh, like, I don't get it. And it just made me even more upset and close in and not express it until I finally got to the point where, you know, I worked with a coach and, you know, kind of got through it. And at some point you sort of have to, you have to put in the work if you really want to dismantle it, because shame will disable confidence in a lot of arenas. And so I would just say, where is your shame? Like, where is it with people, right? You know, everybody has something. It could be your sexuality. It could be because you were molested as a kid. It could be because you were beaten. It could be something really traumatic like that. Or it could be something, like I said, dumb. You have some unsightly moles on your back. You're worried about, it doesn't matter. If you're ashamed about it, it's keeping you in a position where you are feeling unworthy. Shame is a sense of unworthiness. And that is a bad baseline to be operating in life from, because it will often hold you away from the successes and the things that you need. And confident as fuck really is inside and out. It's not just performance confidence. Some of the quietest people in the room are confident. This is not about getting on stage or being some badass CEO and speaking to 50,000 people. You're going to need confidence as a stay-at-home mom to deal with someone else's parent, because it's going to happen. I'm sure it's happened to you. Every parent said deal with some other parent and some bitch at the PTA, whatever. It's going to happen. And what are you going to do? Cower down? No, you've got to speak up, right? You've got to speak up for your child too. So in defense of your child's best interest as well, maybe that's with the school board or whatever it is that comes up, you're going to need that. And by the way, that's a great modeling, because that is showing your child that they are protected and they are safe with you, because you're battling for them, whatever the thing is. Do you know what I mean? And so to always be on your children's side, again, they might have to be punished if they started a fight with Bobby. We get it. But, you know, in general, being on their side, taking their word first and standing up for them. And they see that. They see that. They see it through how you act. So the more confident you are, they're going to pick that up. It's just going to seep into their subconscious, the way that you operate and act. You know what I mean? And that goes the same for the bad behavior, right? Having bad relationships or fights with people over the phone that the kids can hear, that's not good to expose kids to. Just leave them out of it, you know? The other thing too is, so my mother was a single mother since I was like fifth grade, I would say. And she didn't tell me until I was maybe in my late 20s, really how much money she had at the end of the month. It would have probably freaked me out if I knew that my mother had $50 left at the end of every month for anything that could have happened. Knowing that now as an adult almost makes me want to cry on this podcast, thinking about that, thinking about her in that situation. So the other thing too is protect your children from that. They do not need to know how bad things are if things are bad. And I just think that that's a really important thing too, that can protect them from, you know, all of these things we're talking about. And so I really admire that when parents know better to do that. And that's a sign of a great parent, right? Everything's going to be okay. Even if the bear is right at the back door, right? Just, you've got to do that for them. So we never want to let kids into adult type of stuff that way, because it could really worry them and create stress. That's so not necessary for a child.
We tell our parents that a lot. I love that point that you made. You know, some of the things that we have to carry as adults isn't always made child size. You know, you can't like take a little bit of like, oh, well, we just don't have that much this month. I mean, you just need to leave that off the table. Like you
said,
children are so egocentric that even if it has nothing to do with them, they'd say, oh, that $50, that must be because I needed new shoes. That must be because I threw a fit to get a new jar of jelly when we already had grape at home or whatever it may be. I mean, the children really take this into themselves. And so I had a single mother and I ended up being a single mother for a period of time before Jim and I became a blended family. And I will tell you, it's the hardest job on the planet. And
I love single moms. I get goosebumps thinking about them because they're the best.
So I really empathize when you got a little choked up there talking about your mom. It's just such a big and beautiful calling to show up every day as a single mom. So, and then create, you know, children that know that they can do anything in the world is super powerful. So
absolutely. It's going to carry through. It's going to, everything from childhood carries through, abandonment issues carry through. What happens with abandonment issues? You get a lot of people who are overgivers and people pleasers because, so especially with alphas. So a lot of single moms raise alpha chicks like me. And, you know, you could just tell I'm alpha by hearing me speak. But alpha women and men will have an issue where at some point there was usually like an abandonment type of situation. I don't care if the father left or someone, like, you were abandoned. And so what a kid or an adult does then in the place of that is we can be overgivers. So we'll overgive, we'll choose projects and people that need help and rescue situations. We try to rescue people because in the subconscious, it's like, well, I'll rescue you and do this for you and then you won't leave me.
Yeah.
Because I've helped you so much. And it's not conscious, but it happens. And I ask anyone out there, if you're alpha or you had any kind of abandonment issue or a father dropped the ball or a mother dropped the ball and left or any of this kind of stuff, have you been kind of an overgiver or rescuer? That happens a lot. The other thing too is there's a woman, Palmer Kipala. She wrote a book called Beat Autoimmune. She cured herself of MS. Okay. And just, that's insane, but she did. And a couple of people have. She struggled with it for many years, but what she realized is like someone had asked her, why did you get it? That seems like you're blaming, you know, a victim. But here's the thing. When she really looked at it, her parents were awful to each other and she was always sort of in the middle and they would, you know, be fighting and things like that. And she realized as an adult, she was constantly in fight or flight mode, trying to protect mother over here, trying to, you know what I mean? And so what is, that's a state of stress. That is an absolute state of stress. So obviously, yes. Don't fight in front of your kids. Like, really, stop it. There has to be a rule about this. I mean, it's one thing when it's a minor disagreement. Otherwise, take it outside, take it somewhere else. These things filter in, particularly if the dynamic of that fight could be bad in the moment and not true of the couple's dynamic overall. But something they hear in that can really, you know, carry them on through forward where it's just going to impede them and their lives. So again, I think as much as we can protect kids from these nasty kind of conversations or things, of course, we wouldn't let a child watch an R-rated movie, right? So why would you let them hear people, you know, talk to each other that way?
Yeah. Same with just like we were talking before, even the election, you know, over discussing those types of big concepts in front of children, they might feel guilty, you know, or if you hear one parent talk about somebody that's different than the person your parent was talking about, you're like, wow, are my parents bad or your parents bad? It's so interesting.
That's why like kids come back home and they're like, mommy, so-and-so's dad said President Bush was blah, 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 or whatever the president. And again, like, why are they even hearing that? Why are they subjecting them to that? It's interesting. I guess sometimes you can't hold it back. You know, we are in these family units and you're going to hear some things. But again, I think as much as we can protect kids from negative imprints, like watching Beverly Housewives shows and things like this, you know, where people are fighting and they're at their worst, right? And so why would you want your kids to hear you and your spouse or partner talking that way to each other too, or talking about someone that way? So if you're on a phone conversation and you know you're going to talk some shit or something, well, wait, or because you may not want your kid to hear you talk a certain way either. These things, again, can affect how they act and affect how they feel about themselves and how safe they feel around you. And the most important thing is that your kids feel that you are the ultimate in safety, you know, that they feel safe and protected. Yeah.
Which creates confidence for all of you. That's powerful.
And love. I mean, also, like, there's no amount of telling your kid you love them. It should be said all the time. It should be said all the time. That instills confidence. And look, I would challenge my mom. I'd be like, what if I killed the Pope? What if I, and my mom would still say, she would say, and we joke about it now, because I'll be like, hey, would you still love me if I X, right? And she would, back then when I was a kid, she would always, and looking back on it now, I love her for it, but she would always be like, I would be disappointed if you did that, but I would, of course, I would love you. And I would come to jail and visit, you know, I would try to challenge, kids challenge, like, you know what I mean? So again, but even to the end, right? And here's the thing is, on that note, Jeffrey Dahmer, the serial killer who's dead now, but 8 people, for Christ's sakes, his father was there. This poor guy, I remember watching interviews and being like, oh my God, this guy, and his father sitting there being like, how did my son do this? But his father's still there because he's a father, because that's your parent. So we want to know that you're going to love us to the end, no matter what. Now, hopefully your kid will not end up murdering people and be a serial killer. But I remember challenging my mom on all sorts of levels on that. And the answer was always the same. I'll still love you. I'll be disappointed. You might have to come visit you in prison, but I'll still love you, right? So I think that that's really important. And there's no shortage of that, you know, or you'll say, especially with girls or any kids, weight issues, body image issues. Look, there's kids that have thyroid issues and stuff that they can help. So if your child's expressing issues about their body image, you know, instead of being like, well, yeah, you could use a little weight, just be like, well, let's talk about it. Do you want to like work with me? Should we see what we can do maybe about, you know, go see a doctor, lifestyle, like, or, you know, how are you feeling? How's it, you know, and if it's a few extra pounds, I remember when I was going through puberty and I might've been hypothyroid then, I did write another book on that, but I was very chunky in high school, certain parts. And I remember being like, I'm so fat, mom, and like crying to her and being like, look at me. And my mom would be like, you're beautiful. You have a beautiful figure. I think you're beautiful. Now, I didn't really totally believe her, but I'm so glad she said it anyway. It makes me tear up. Moms are the best. But that is like something that like she said that anyway, even though she probably was like, well, yeah, you know, maybe inside she was thinking something else, but she didn't say that to me. That would have ruined me had she said, you know, yeah, well, I've noticed you've got, you know what I mean? You got to tread lightly with kids. You're imprinting their entire soul into them. And, you know, they'll have choices later and they'll have their own work to do and they'll have to parent themselves when they get to a certain point. That's something I also advocate. It's like, you can't be blaming your parents for everything. And if you're older, if you're an adult now and you recognize that your parents had some pitfalls, guess what? Parent yourself. Stop letting them be right and stop letting them, whatever they did to you, control. You, now you've just let them win. So you've let that shitty parent win who told you it amount to nothing or whatever that was. That's you now. That's not them. That's you. But when we're young, we're imprinted in a way that, you know, you cannot, yeah, you just can't control it. You're in a household and you're a kid. You can't walk out. So yeah, once we get to be adults, we have to look at parental garbage. We have to look at people being downers on our confidence again, like, yeah, right. Good luck with that. Or, well, you're not going to make a lot of money at that. I remember speaking with a very famous, very multi, probably worth $1 billion producer in LA, who I won't mention, is really famous. And we were walking through New York with a bunch of people, and there's this really cool, beautiful old brick, classic New York building with a for sale sign on it. And he said, you know, I remember like I'd be walking with my father as a kid through places like this. And I would say, oh, I want a place like that someday. And his dad would be like, well, you better start saving up now. You know, things like that, those kind of comments. Well, it turns out, haha, on everyone, he became a multi-gajillionaire and could buy 500 times that building. But those are the kind of snide remarks, you know? Well, money doesn't hang on trees. What do you think you are, Rockefellers? You know, that imprints impressions about money upon children, you know? I think it's more important, at least for kids, that we, you know, they follow what they love and what they're passionate about. We all know that a BA degree, even from a university, is kind of useless nowadays. It's almost like a high school degree was many years ago. Let the kids study what they want. Let them do what they want. It's not going to matter. As long as they have the degree, they have the degree. I mean, unless they're going to be a doctor. Yeah, you have to study biology in college. You know, there's no way getting around that. Right. But other than that, I always tell kids when they're like, what should I major in? I'm like, if you don't know, then just do whatever you're interested in, because all you care about at this point is the degree. No one ever got a BA in business that started a business because of that. Like, that has nothing to do with it. You'd be I have a degree in philosophy. The most useless to most people. I think it's the most useful. Honestly, it's been the most useful in my life. But to most of the world, I can't even tell you how many episodes of Symptoms and everything else have ripped on philosophy majors or philosophy degrees, right? It seems really useless. Like, what can you do with that? I'm here to tell you, it absolutely helped me in business as a writer, as a speaker, as a coach, everything that I do in hindsight. So I'm really glad I got that useless degree. Right. So I think these are things I've learned over time, especially like with the kids going to school and parents pushing them to study one thing or another. And again, yes, if you really want to be a doctor and your kid's saying that, well, they can't take sociology as a major. That wouldn't make any sense. They'll never get into medical school. But other than those things, it doesn't matter. Let them go find their way. Because once they're out in the real world as an adult, that's when it's really like, okay, pedal to the metal. Now life is life, right? And then you can steer them in certain directions that way too.
Gosh, you have shared so much today. Thank you. And I'm excited to ask you one final question. I know we've talked about, you know, characteristics of confident people. And also, you know, I love that you said kind of the opposite of a confident person would be a bully. You know, it's so interesting to me. Like, I even felt like, oh, wow, all those people who are assholes that you think like have it all together. So they're entitled to be an asshole. Like, no, that's not it. It's the opposite.
It's an extreme lack of confidence. Same with people that brag. Because again, they care so much about what other people think. The ultimate in being confident as fuck is being okay with being vulnerable, being okay with this kind of stuff, because it's the ultimate not giving a shit about what other people think of you. And that really is the ultimate in being confident. Now, I was a bully as a kid, and not horrific one, but I was one. I actually later on apologized to two girls in my grade school because I felt mortified as an adult that I operated this way. Hurt people hurt people. My parents went through a divorce. My dad lost all of our money. I was feeling weird about my safety and security, my life, my drunk dad, you know, all this kind of stuff. No wonder I was an asshole. Also, I had this baseline of confidence, but then it gets skewed, right? And it can be, that's why it's a pitfall. It rolls into bullying, it rolls into being mean if you're an uncoached alpha kid like me. So bullying is a big problem, but what I see more as a problem is parents' reaction to it. For example, just being like, oh, don't pay those kids any attention. Oh my gosh, that's also really kind of discounting it. It's more important to talk to them about who they are, why they feel that way, why they won't speak up for themselves, you know, getting into the juice of it versus just blowing it off, because it's going to continue and that didn't do anything for their confidence. Just go, oh, well, you just can't pay attention to those people. You know, they're probably having problems at home. I mean, I might be more inclined to have a kid be like, no, we're going to talk about you. Yeah. Like, you're going to let these, you know, hey, you know, and like speaking up and being more firm in it. I have a family member who's a little girl and she was worried about being bullied at a pool. And I said, hey, are you getting bullied at school? Why don't you tell me a story? And she told me a story about how she walked up to her table of friends and said, oh, I'm going to go eat lunch with Joe over there today. And they were like, all right, well, you can eat with Joe on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but like, that's it. And what I love is that she had a friend next to her who goes, hey, you're not the boss of her. You're not going to tell her when she can and can't eat with people. And I was like, ooh, that kid was raised right. That kid was raised right. She came to the defense of my family member. And also, like, she's right. That's what I would have said. You're not going to tell me who to eat with. But my family member wasn't strong enough to say that. She probably would have, if her friend wasn't there, been like, okay. And then what? You've just let people dominate you and completely run you around. And that bullies prey on this. I preyed on. I mean, listen, it's like a Sikh heating missile. You can see who's up to be taken when you're a bully. So you really want to instill confidence in your children. So also as an adult too. I mean, this happens all the time. Even as adult bullying, I talk about it as well. And I speak about it. So I think that that's really important to get to the root of this stuff and build confidence instead of blow it off or say, don't pay attention to the person. That's still not addressing their lack of confidence and why they didn't stand up for themselves in a situation. Now, on the other side of it too, you got to choose your battles wisely. Confident people do so. I'd rather have a broken ego than a broken face. There are times when you shut up and you just don't say anything, right? Even though confident people are authentic and tell it like it is, if I'm at your mom's house for Thanksgiving and she's got an ugly sweater and says, don't you think it's cute? I'm going to let her have it. And it's not the time to go, actually, I think it's ugly. Okay, don't be a jerk. This is not about, right? You speak your mind all the time. You choose your battles wisely. And I think we need to, you know, we can exemplify that through our children, but also there were times when my parents spoke up and like, I'm glad they did. I felt like in their presence, like, yeah, that's right. You get them, you know, and had they cowered down, I don't know. I think I would have lost maybe some sense of respect for them even as a child. That's something we can inherently feel as kids too, where you just go, you know, defeated. Yeah.
No one wants to be that parent. So what would much older Elle say to you of today, 75-year-old self, you know, even wiser, seen more elections, more sunrises, more beautiful days in her bikini? What would she say about what you're experiencing right now? How would she parent you, I guess? You know, how would she tell you? What would be her highlights of encouragement for you? Either what you accomplished in life or maybe something that you're struggling with that you know deep down that older person would actually say, hey, you got this. Whatever that may be, 75-year-old Elle.
I think that my 75-year-old self right now to me would be like, I'm really proud you got over this shame. situation. Because I have a hand disability, I have a physical disability that you can't see, you wouldn't be able to tell. I live like a normal person, but it's something that really created shame for 20 years of my life that I only recently in the past 5 years really worked through and got over and came out about, wrote a whole chapter in my book about it, I speak about it. But before I could never even mention it without bawling, crying, and I was a mess and it screwed up a lot of relationships. And it was probably the last element in me becoming confident as fuck because I was already confident in a variety of areas in my life. And that's my argument. You might be out there and be like, well, I'm already confident. I would say that you probably have some pitfalls or there might be something. And if you're shuffling something over in the rug here, like I was shuffling this over in the corner thinking it wasn't affecting my other areas of life or confidence, you're going to get your ass handed to you like I did. So I think that my 75-year-old self would be like, finally, yes, I'm so glad you addressed it and you got over it. You dealt with it. And there's no woulda, coulda, shoulda in life. But I will say that if I could have gotten to it sooner, I would have gotten to it decades ago.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. How can our listeners find more about you?
You can go to my website, lruss.com. I did write a book called The Paleo Thyroid Solutionist for my first book. And so if you do have a thyroid problem or any kind of thyroid issues, I have a free thyroid guide on my website, which tells you all the blood tests to take and everything else. So that's there for the people that are dealing with thyroid issues. You can find both of my books on Amazon, most stores, you know, like Barnes & Noble, et cetera. But yeah, lruss.com is a great place to go. And then every Monday, I host the Primal Blueprint podcast, which is Mark Sisson's podcast, where I interview people every week in the mind, body, health arena. And then every Wednesday, I host Kick-Ass Life podcast with Tara Garrison. And we talk about everything from the powers of conscious mind to adult bullying, to everything that you can do to that we're working on to create a more kick-ass life and sort of an inspiring place to be. So, and you can join our Facebook group on that. All that information is pretty much on my website.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing, because I'm sure our listeners are going to want more of you.
So much. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.